You don't hear much more about Adam and Eve, do you? As a matter of fact, after that, we have this list of genealogies of all these different people. And it seems like since there was not a witness for God, since God was no longer walking with them, talking with them, man's minds became so depraved and so without God, because without a witness for the mightiness, the beauty, the majesty of God, without a witness for God, man's minds become completely about themselves. As a matter of fact, it happened. Within just a few generations, people were thinking nothing about God. They were thinking completely and totally about themselves. As a matter of fact, after all these people have been born, all these generations going on, there's only one man that was talked about that actually walked with God. Remember who it was? A guy named Enoch. Doesn't know much about him. All it says is that he walked with God. He walked with God. And then God took him, and he was no more. Everyone else says he begat this and begat that. Enoch walked with God. I don't know what it was. Maybe he actually just chose to see God, chose to search for God, recognized there was something more to the world than what everyone else was living for, but he chose to seek God in some way, shape, or form, or God chose to reveal himself to him, and he walked with God. And that's an awesome thing. But then we come to a point that man's minds became so depraved. They completely shut God out so much. Are you guys all hearing me? There came a point in time in history when man's minds became so depraved, so without God, so not acknowledging God, so completely consumed with themselves. God got to the point, we really need to hear this, God got to a point because of the sin of man, it became so great, so ingrained, so prevalent in the world, so bad, there was not anyone except for one who was still acknowledging and walking, desiring to be with God. And his name was Noah. And God got to a point where he says, you know what? Take a look with me. Let's just read exactly what he says. Genesis chapter 6. It says, the Lord saw, after all these generations, we've got Enoch in between Adam and Eve, right? No one else. After all these generations, the Lord saw how great man's wickedness on earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind whom I have created from the face of the earth, men and animals, creatures that move along the ground, birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. So here's the thing. God did make them. He created every single one of them, okay? Because of sin, they've chosen to walk away from God. God has every right, listen to me, God has every right to destroy that which he has created, that which is his own. And we are all his own. He has every right to do that. Some people think, well, man, God is so mad and angry and unjust. No, he's totally just, all right, in what's going on. But we have this little but here in verse 8. It says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. This is the account of Noah, the one man in all of creation at this point in time. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time, and here it is, and he walked with God. He walked with God. He acknowledged God. He saw God in creation. He worshiped him. And God chose Noah. He chose Noah to act in obedience. He says, Noah, here's what I'm doing. I'm going to destroy the earth. And what I want you to do is I want you to build an ark. An ark for what? It didn't make any sense. There was no need for boats at this point in time, but God was commanding him to build an ark. And Noah, in his obedience, built the ark. Okay? He built the ark in obedience. And then God came to Noah once again. He says, you know what? I want you to gather up. I want you to allow all these different animals to come into the ark. And Noah's like, all these different, huh? Guess what? In obedience, he allowed the animals to come into the ark. At a point in time, God said to Noah, get in the ark. And guess what? In his obedience, He got in the ark. The flood came. Everything was destroyed. In obedience, at the right point in time, God said to Noah, get out of the ark. And he got out of the ark. You see, there's a pattern that God sets up in our lives if we choose to listen. If we choose, we can walk with God. As we walk with God, God reveals himself to us. As God reveals himself to us, he gives us the opportunity to serve him. He gives us the opportunity to know him better by walking in obedience to him. He calls us to do crazy things. Yes? He calls us to do crazy things, and we have an opportunity. I'm looking at Dave and Robin right now because this is Jubilee. I mean, he calls us to do crazy things that don't make a lot of sense to all the other people around us, and we have a choice to follow that calling, or we have a choice to not. If we choose to follow that calling, God reveals himself to us in our obedience. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's even harder. I'm just warning you. But God reveals, and we have a knowledge and an understanding of who God is through our obedience. And the more we obey, the more we understand God, the more we understand God, hopefully the more that we want of God, and the more we continue to obey, because he'll continue to call us in that relationship with him over and over again. We have an entire list of men and women throughout the entire Old Testament who were chosen, who God calls, who obey, and God reveals himself to him a little bit more. Take a look with me in looking at Noah. You can also take a look at Abraham. Do you remember Abraham's entire life? Out of all the people, God chooses Abraham. He says, go to this place, and he goes. He says, I'm going to choose you to be a mighty nation. And God believes, or Abraham believes him. By faith, he believes him. And God continues to reveal himself to Abraham, and God continues to bless him in amazing ways. Was Abraham perfect? No. Abraham had one thing going for him. He was chosen by God. He believed God, and it was accredited to him as righteousness. And God blessed him. And God made a change, not just for Abraham and his family, but God made a change for the whole world. Guess what? God made a change in Noah's life for the whole world. Guess what? God chose Abraham, and he changed it for the whole world. He set a new example. Man, we could go on and on. We'd take a look at David. Take a look at Moses. Remember Moses? Of all the people, everyone else had turned their backs on God again. They're living in slavery. God chooses one man. He chooses Moses. And he calls him out of the water. Calls him out of the water. Changes his heart. He meets him in a burning bush. He says, you're standing on hollow ground. And he says, oh my goodness, what's going on here? And he says, I've chosen you to go back and bring my people out of Egypt. He goes, no, I can't do that. And he says, you know what? What do you have in your hand? He says, throw down a staff. You guys remember this story? Maybe you don't. I'm going to tell you a little bit in my own version here. He says, throw down what you have in your hand. He throws down his shepherd's staff, because that's all Moses is at this point in time, is a shepherd. He throws down his staff. What happens to his staff? Diane, what happens to his fan? It becomes a snake. Man, that would freak me out. But I'd see the power of God. I was like, wow, this is a powerful God. He turned my staff that I've been carrying along all these days. He turns it into a snake, and that's a powerful thing. But then God says, you know what? What's he supposed to do next? He says, pick it up. Now, wait a second. It's one thing to throw it down and turn it into a snake. It's a whole other thing for me to bend down and pick up a snake. Yes? That's a whole new level of obedience. Guess what he does? He bends down. You sure about this? Bends down. As soon as he grabs the snakes, what happens? It comes to his staff. All of a sudden, Moses' faith just grew a little bit. But he still wasn't there. Remember what he did next? He says, you know what? If you need another sign, he says, put your hand in your coat. Puts his hand in his coat. Says, pull it out. Pulls it out. It's white. It's leprous. He has leprosy all over his hand. Like the kiss of death right there. Man, my life is over. I've got leprosy. He says, put it back in. He puts it back in. Pulls it back out. Clean as can be. You see, Moses' faith was growing in God with each time that he was being obedient to what God called him to do. He goes into Israel. Or but goes back to Egypt. He leads the people out. I'm skipping over a whole lot of things. All right? He leads the people out. All the people are following Moses. They're not necessarily following God. They're following Moses because of the miracles that they saw Moses, thinking Moses is doing those things. They follow him out. They get cornered by the Red Sea. All right? Soon as they get cornered by the Red Sea and the Egyptians are coming to kill him, everyone turns against Moses because they aren't looking to God. They're looking to Moses. And they start crying out, were there not enough graves in Egypt that we had to die out here in the desert? Moses turns to God. God says, hey, hold out your staff. The Red Sea parts. They all pass through the Red Sea. They all see the power of God. They all walk in obedience. They're probably not walking in obedience. They're walking in absolute fear of the people behind them. But they all go through the Red Sea. They all see the miracle. They all see the power of God. 3 days later, I could look at all these passages if you want me to, but I'm kind of summarizing so we're not here all morning. 3 days later, after walking through the Red Sea on dry ground, watching the Egyptians completely destroyed, their enemies destroyed, 3 days later, you know what they do? They start whining and complaining because they don't have any water. Okay, so we just watched the Red Sea part and we walked through it on dry ground. We watched our enemies totally collapsed. 3 days later, I'm going to start whining about water to Moses. Moses throws the stick in the water, fresh water, they get water. Time after time after time after time. They see the power of God. Be careful here because this is kind of convicting on us. They see the power of God working through Moses. And they're looking at Moses thinking he's doing it. That's really what's in their mind. Because when Moses comes down off the mountain, I hope everyone gets to see this. When Moses comes down off the mountain, we better get there. Exodus chapter 20. When Moses comes down off the mountain with the commandments, the tablets, and there's smoke and there's fire and billowing smoke and loud noises. When Moses comes down, it says they saw him, Exodus chapter 20, verse 18. These letters, I've got the large print and they're getting smaller and smaller. I'm wondering who's coming in and replacing the pages of my Bible during the week is what I'm trying to figure out. Either that or my arms are getting... I got glasses. That's a good point, Pete. Thank you. Pete's going. All right. Diane, we look alike now. So we can look over our glasses and go up and down. All right. So here we go. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it. Wow, it's much clearer now. I'm getting old. It says, when the people saw the thunder and the lightning and heard the trumpet and saw the mountain in smoke, they trembled with fear. Now, after all the things that God has already done, all right, we've got all the plagues in Egypt, bringing them out, Red Sea, the water, the manna, the pheasants or the quail, the water coming out of the rock, all these amazing things that God has done, all right? And so Moses is coming down off the mountain. They see the thunder, the lightning, and all this stuff, and they're scared. They stayed at a distance, and they were told to stay at a distance. Speak to us, they said to Moses. They said, speak to us yourself, and we will listen. Speak to us, and we will listen. But do not have God speak to us, or we will die. Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. God has come to test you, so that the fear of God will be with you to keep you from sinning. Moses is saying very plainly, he's saying, God is doing this in your life, all right? Good things and bad, hard, not bad, but challenging. God is doing this so you will listen to him, all right? And you will follow him, not another man. Follow God, all right? Keep you from sinning. Verse 21, the people remained at a distance while Moses approached the thick darkness where God was. You see what happens, and it's happening even now today. People would rather listen to the preacher or the guy on the radio or the songs. We would rather have someone else talk to God and then have God tell us what we're supposed to do, because that way we can blame the other person. Here's the thing. That's not how God designed this to work in any way, shape, or form, because if we do that, then we're following a person. We're following a pastor. We're following something else. And God didn't design that. He designed it to walk with you, to abide with you, to be in you, for you to hear the voice of God, for you to obey, for you to see the miraculous things that God can do in your life, and so that you will grow in your understanding, your faith, and then your praise and worship of God. That's how he designed it to be. But so many times people don't want that. They want someone else to tell them. That's not how God designed it to be. That's not how he wants it to be. He wants to listen to me. He wants to have a personal relationship with you. And that personal relationship happens as we abide, as we listen, as we follow and obey and see what God is going to do in our lives. And as we obey, we see him, we understand him better, and we want to obey more. It's with each and every one of you that he wants that relationship. That's why I say, I am so grateful, I am so thankful, I am so amazed and so grateful that we are on this side of the cross, because on that side of the cross, all these different examples, you can look at Samson, you can look at all these different examples all the way through the Old Testament, every single one of them come to a point where it seems like they just stop. They get to a spot where they're comfortable. They get to a spot where they're not listening and obeying anymore. And we don't hear anything more about them. And that's not what God designed for us. He has a plan for each and every one of us. As a matter of fact, in Ezekiel, he gives us a prophecy of what God is going to do. And he uses the entire Old Testament, he uses all these people before Christ to help us feel and understand the frustration of what life would be like without the Holy Spirit that we've got today. And God actually reveals his plan of how he's going to work in the world to accomplish his will that he had set forth before the creation of the world. Remember Ephesians chapter 1? Before the creation of the world, God's plan was this. I love how he lays it out so plainly in Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 36, we get this prophecy. I love it. Beginning at verse 25, Ezekiel 36. He's speaking to Israel, but he's also prophesying about all who will come after. Listen to what he says in plain English here. He says, "For I will take you out of the nations. I will gather you from all the countries and bring you back into your own land." Verse 25, "I will sprinkle clean water on you and you will be clean. I will cleanse you from all impurities, from all your idols. I will give you a new heart." Listen to what God is saying. "I'm going to give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees." I will put my spirit in you and move you to follow my decrees. "And be careful to keep my laws. You will live in the land I gave your forefathers. You will be my people, and I will be your God. I will save you from all your uncleanness, and I will call for the grain and make it plentiful, and will not bring famine upon you. I will increase the fruit of the trees and the crops of the field, so that you will no longer suffer disgrace among the nations because of famine." God says, "I'm going to create a time where there will be a new heart. I will give you a new heart, a heart of flesh, not a heart of stone. I will allow my spirit to be in you." Guess what? That day is today, because we live on this side of the cross. God's greatest desire is not that you follow another man, not that you follow another teaching. He wants you to follow the spirit that he wants to place within you. And it starts by believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the God, the Son of the living God. And to obey him in obedience, even in the smallest of things, into the biggest of things. Because when we obey him in the smallest of things, he allows our faith to grow. We have a great understanding of who he is. The more that we understand who he is, the more that we know that we can trust him. It's an amazing thing. And it all happens through that Holy Spirit. And it all starts with our belief that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. Because when we believe that he died for our sin and he took the punishment for our sin, and we become a new creation in the watery grave of baptism, and we become a new being, the Spirit dwells within us and we can hear that Spirit. And don't ignore it. And don't get comfortable. Continue following him day after day after day. And our understanding of him becomes greater. And our relationship with him becomes stronger. And he's in you. It's an amazing thing. Keep stepping out in obedience. Even when it doesn't make sense to the people around you, step out. You know, in the last several weeks, I've had... I'm rubbing my hands. That's not a good... Well, that's a good thing, but it's a scary thing. The last several weeks, I've had several people questioning why we're doing what we're doing behind us here with the building. Why are we spending this much money? Why are we doing this? Because it really doesn't make a lot of sense in the minds of a lot of people. It's really not an example or a ministry model that's been set out there and proven and tried and true, and it's really going to, you know, be perfect. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But I don't know if you understand, and I'm trying to get this across. That building is absolutely nothing without you. And without each one of us listening to what God is calling us to do in ministry and obeying it. If we can't and won't do that, it's just another building. And here's the thing. He's got a calling for each one of us. It might just be to come in at 7:00 in the morning and walk around the building and invite other people to come and walk and talk and share. But he's given each one of us gifts. He's given each one of us passions. He's given each one of us ability to do incredible things, and every one of them is from God. And he gave you those gifts and passions and abilities for a reason, so that we would use them in such a way that we'd understand God more fully and we could praise and worship him. And to use those gifts and abilities to share with others an amazing God who has given them gifts and abilities and talents for the same reason, to praise and worship him. We need to get this through our heads. No one is excluded. You see, in Ephesians chapter 1, he says, I have chosen you. You know how amazing that is? Do you know how many people before the cross were actually chosen? Very few to walk with God. But because of the cross, you have the opportunity to walk with him, to talk with him, to hear his voice, to grow in your relationship and obedience and praise and worship of an incredible God. And he has chosen you. Listen to me. He has chosen you. Now you get to choose whether you'll follow him. Let's stand and sing.